Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. What should Astoria's waterfront look like? Should remaining undeveloped parcels be left open to preserve views and provide easier access to the Columbia River? Or should those open spaces become sites for future motels or other kinds of development that bring jobs and tourists to the community? On today's show, my two guests discuss the future of Astoria's waterfront along the Great River of the West. Astoria City Manager and former Community Development Director Brett Estes and longtime city planner Rosemary Johnson, who has retired but works for the city on a contractual basis, have collaborated on the Riverfront Vision Plan since its initial drafting in 2008-2009. All but one section of the Riverfront Plan has been completed, and the City Council recently began work to finish that final stretch, the so-called urban core, between 2nd Street on the west and 16th Street on the east. The work is expected to take approximately 1 year and will provide opportunities for public input. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Brett and Rosemary.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Joan.
I'd like to start by getting some background on the plan, how it was that it was even drafted. Brett, why don't you start?
Sure. I actually came to Astoria in 2007, and before I arrived here, there was quite a bit of interest in developing housing, condominiums, particularly along the waterfront. And this interest in residential development along the waterfront stirred some community interest in looking at the future development patterns along the waterfront and really revisiting earlier plans that had been completed for the Columbia River's waterfront. And as I said, I came in September of 2007, and one of the first projects that was put on my desk was to begin what we now refer to as the Riverfront Vision Plan. And we went out and had a group of citizens that assisted staff in finding the appropriate consultant team to move forward in looking at issues dealing with land use, transportation, the environmental interface along the waterfront, and all the other particulars that come into play along development. The focus of the vision plan was really Highway 30/101, depending on where you're at along Marine Drive or Leif Erickson, north to the waterfront and over water within the city limits.
And was there one thing in particular that precipitated the drafting of the plan? My understanding is that this was right before the housing market bubble, as well as the stock market crash, and Astoria was having quite a bit of interest from developers in building condominiums. Rosemary?
At the time this started, we had 13 different projects that were under discussion for building over the waterfront. Most of those were condominiums. That was during the boom times when everyone wanted to build. And so that, as Brett said, brought the attention to the citizens. And so that was really what started it. And then the city council saw that the citizens were concerned. They were concerned as to how we would develop. And that's when they initiated the process to start the discussion with the community. Because yes, you have citizens who don't want development and want the views, but then you also have private property owners and local developers or developers from outside who have rights and have visions of their own. So what we had to do was go through this vision process to balance out all the conflicting needs and desires for our waterfront.
And Joan, if real quick, if I just may add something, you know, when we looked at the when this development interest was happening, if we were to look at the zoning along the waterfront at that time, it really was a snapshot in time, maybe from an earlier time. And in many circumstances, there would be no height limitations along the waterfront. And, you know, what could possibly be developed may have just outstripped many people's kind of appreciation or tolerances for development. And really, a new look was needed because it was a zoning platform that was several decades stale, perhaps.
I think you pretty much answered my next question, but what would you say is the plan's purpose in general, either one of you?
I think the purpose is to protect views while balancing that with some allowable economic development. And so it's not looking at prohibiting development along our waterfront, but looking at it in design and location and what views do you want to preserve and how do you allow your city to have health economically while still preserving those views.
I would also note that, you know, it's really trying to embrace historical attributes of the mm-hmm. waterfront, embracing the working waterfront character, and allowing, you know, those activities which make Astoria be able to continue.
And I was struck reading the plan, which, by the way, is available on the city's website, that it emphasizes throughout the plan what you just mentioned, Brett, and ensuring that the access to the riverfront, both physical and visual, is maintained. So I guess the question is how you go about where is that balance?
Definitely.
Right.
Well, go ahead, Rosemary.
I was going to say that's where the plan comes up with the four areas. And I think that's what addresses that, in that the entire waterfront is not the same. The consultant saw four distinct areas that each of them has a different feel, a different development. And that's why we have these four areas, the Bridge Vista, which went from Portway to Second Street.
Uniontown.
The Uniontown area. And then you have the urban core, which goes from 2nd Street to 16th around the Maritime Museum. And then Civic Greenway goes from 16th to 40th Street. That's the East End Pier 39 area. And then Alderbrook, or the neighborhood Greenway area, went from 40th to Alderbrook Lagoon on the east side. So each of those had a different feel and character. And so you wanted to find the vision that would work for each of those. Bridge Vista was more a mixture of some industrial, but great views of the bridge and the water, and yet there were potential for pedestrian-oriented areas. And so that's where that one focused. The Civic Greenway had the biggest or broadest river views, and that one really needed some protection to preserve those big vistas.
It's from the museum to 39th Street.
Correct. And so yet you had the East Mooring Basin and 39th Street with some development and balancing out what could happen there. Then Alderbrook is the neighborhood of Greenway. That is a neighborhood with just two existing historic buildings out over the water. Again, natural vistas and very little potential for development because it is residential, more residential area. Then the urban core, that's the densest area of our waterfront. And so that one saw the potential for some development, but still wanted to get the public or out to the water, both visually and physically. Physical access, it made suggestions about pathways out around buildings, docks and decks around.
For example, 14th Street, where there's a pier.
Correct.
Out over the water.
Correct. So that one goes out. And then at Pier 11, there's some walkways out. And if you go down to the Red Building in Uniontown, it has a pier around the north side of the building so you can walk on the riverside. So there's lots of opportunities there, yet still keeping view corridors. If you have a single-story building that goes the full block, you've lost your view. So a higher building that is not as broad may give you better vistas of the river if you're going to have some development. So there's a lot of balance that the plan started looking at to try to implement the vision or what the citizens were wanting.
The urban core is the section that the city council has just begun working on, and that is really the downtown core, you could also call it.
Correct.
What does that work entail?
In terms of moving forward?
Yeah,
now?
To complete that section of the plan.
So maybe, you know, first on, talking about what maybe the vision plan was and when it was adopted, that was it was adopted as a component of the city's comprehensive plan, which guides development through recommendations for the code amendments that we're now taking on for the urban core. And we've completed the code amendments for the three other districts and three other areas. And so now we're looking at this urban core. I look at it as when we're drafting code language, this is where the rubber meets the road, where laws are put into place in terms of how development will occur in the future. And it comes down to taking the Riverfront Vision Plan and having our planning commissioners and our city councilors interpret that in terms of the appropriate code language to put in place.
How much leeway does the city council, since they are the first to get a crack at it, I believe, have in setting code for that section, the urban core between 2nd and 16th Street?
Well, let me just say that we brought this to the city council just to make sure they were prepared to go forward with the process, and they were. There was some discussions. Did they wish to weigh in with policy matters to the planning commission, and they chose as a whole to let the community speak and not put any policies. Actually, the next step will be planning commission.
Okay.
So the planning commissioners will be working with Rosemary, with our consultant team in reviewing some drafts and ultimately working on what's going to be recommended to the city council.
So we're going to start off by having a work session with the Planning Commission to bring them up to speed as to what the Riverfront Vision Plan is and what our process is going to be. Then we'll hold a public open house, and we'll invite anyone to come and give us input as to how they want to see the Riverfront Vision Plan implemented. From there, the consultant and I will start drafting some code based on that input and based on the plan. And then we'll have future work sessions with the Planning Commission as we draft these different sections and give the Planning Commission an opportunity to really get in there and write it the way it should be and have the citizens comment as we go along. So we'll take sections at a time, not the entire code at once. And there'll be lots of time for property owners and for citizens and anyone to come in and speak and review the drafts as we go through it.
I was just going to mention all those meetings are public, even if there isn't a public hearing.
Correct.
The public can attend all work sessions. How soon before you expect the Planning Commission to begin working?
We are just now in the process of signing the contract with the consultant, and then I will be meeting with him to set up a schedule. We don't know yet exactly when we're going to start these meetings, but they will be advertised widely. We'll have a mailing list of all interested parties, and that list will constantly grow as new people show interest. So we'll make it as public as possible and making sure everyone knows that they can attend these meetings. And then eventually we'll get to the point where the Planning Commission will hold a formal public hearing for to decide on the code and make a recommendation to the City Council. Then there will be an additional public hearing formally at the City Council level, and it's the City Council that makes the final decision.
What are some of the various ways people can be informed about when meetings are being held?
Sure. So, I mean, there's if there is someone who wants to get on the email distribution list that Rosemary mentioned, they're able to contact the Community Development Department and request that they be put on that that list. And as Rosemary said, many times that starts growing and becoming larger over time. But also focusing on the public notices and the meeting notices we have for Planning Commission meetings, because that will be listed on the agenda as well.
We will also have on the city's website, it says projects, and we'll be posting meeting dates there. And I want, as a a baby boomer, I want to let people know it doesn't have to be email. If they want regular mail, we will still mail them. They don't have to do email.
And what is the Community Development Department's phone number for those who don't want to go online or can't go online?
Right, 503-338-5183. And so they can call, they can email us at the city, or as I said, go online to find it on the city's website. We will have it in the newspaper, do mailings. We'll contact neighborhood associations. So
you're going to get the word out.
Yes.
If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with Astoria City Manager Brett Estes and retired Astoria City Planner Rosemary Johnson. They are discussing the city's Riverfront Vision Plan, which maps out future uses of waterfront land. Earlier this month, the City Council began work to complete the final stretch of the plan in the so-called Urban Core, which extends from 2nd Street on the west to 16th Street on the east. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria and 89.5 Tillamook. This program is pre-recorded, and 3 days before this program aired, or airs, as the case may be, is a public hearing that I know there is a lot of interest in regarding the Fairfield Hotel, a four-story structure at the site of the former Ship Inn, which is now closed, the popular restaurant at the foot of 2nd Street. How does the Riverfront Vision Plan affect or not such a development, and whether it is approved or not?
Well, to start with, I would say that before the Riverfront Vision Plan implementation in the Bridge Vista area, which is where that one's located, you could build over the water, which the hotel, had it come in at before this whole process, could have made a proposal to go over the water. So that was one of the first things that applied. After that, we looked at the maximum square footage that buildings should be so that we didn't have massive buildings along the waterfront. They also looked at the height, and for view corridors, especially if you're walking the river trail, making sure that buildings weren't just a tunnel that you would be walking through. So we had what was called step backs, where upper levels had to step back from the plane of the ground floor of the buildings. Some of the location on the lot, materials that they're using for the siding, and a lot of design features, landscaping, all of those will be addressed through the new codes that are in place.
And talk more about the codes, partly that came out of the Riverfront Vision Plan for each of the sections. How did the plan affect the way zoning ordinances are mapped out in each of those sections?
So Civic Greenway looked at more open spaces, broader views. And so what we did there was there would be little or no development out over the water. However, when you got to the existing East End Mooring Basin and the Pier 39 and the condominium area out there, that's already partially developed. And so there was a provision in the code that allowed some development there out further in the water rather than up close to the shore, more like what you have the Cannery Pier Hotel. Mm-hmm. And then it allowed for the port to come in with a master plan of how they wanted to develop the East End Mooring Basin area. That master plan then would be presented to the City Council for review and approval to see how the codes would apply. Yep. In addition, it did allow some on-land development, but again put in some design features to make it compatible with those broad vistas.
And Rosemary, I'd note that was actually the City Council's direction to staff, was to complete that area first, because of the planned overwater protections that were going to be put in place through zoning codes.
So then the other one we did was Neighborhood Greenway, which is Alderbrook. And there, as I mentioned earlier, there are only two existing historic buildings or older buildings. And it had little potential for development. It was more residential in character. And so the neighborhood there wanted it to stay as it was, more natural area with the Alderbrook Lagoon. So most of the codes are basically just saying no overwater development in that area other than what's existing. So then we went to Bridge Vista. Now, Bridge Vista is quite a mixture because you have the port area with the Astoria Riverwalk Inn. You have Astoria Warehousing with some more industrial area. And yet that's also the walking area for Uniontown and the bistro, the Red Building, that area. So that's a nice mixture of allowing for some development, yet keeping it lower in scale so that you still had good vistas of the bridge. It protected some of the vistas, such as the foot of 2nd Street and the old cannery boiler that's out there, and saying that if you're going to develop over the water there, it could not be higher than the bank line. That would allow for some maybe decking or dock area so that you could have a small boat come up or something, but not block views.
Yeah, so really in that area, there's as Rosemary said earlier, that before the code amendments were put in place, you could have overwater residential and hotel uses.
And in many cases with no height restriction.
Overwater such as the Columbia House condominiums.
Yes. Right, right. And so the thing is that post the code development was put in place, those uses are not allowed. There was a provision that allowed for the redevelopment of the Astoria Riverwalk Inn. That's already an overwater existing hotel, and a provision was put in place that should it redevelop, it could redevelop as an overwater hotel.
Right. In all cases, we tried to take into consideration existing buildings and the value of those buildings should something happen to them, or so that those owners have the rights to continue with those uses. The other thing with Bridge Vista, as I mentioned, was the pedestrian-friendly area. So there was a more smaller-scale, pedestrian-oriented commercial area that was identified for that. So there was some design review, heights, view corridors, landscaping, that was another big thing in some of these areas, and transportation. So in each of these areas, the transportation element came in as to how do you get people to the waterfront? How do you cross Marine Drive to get down to the river trail and things like that? So there was a lot taken into consideration other than just building over the water.
Astoria was a sleepy town when I moved here in 1986. And I didn't plan on staying, but that things changed. I fell in love with the place. That definitely has changed, that it has been discovered. I'm just curious, as the Community Development Department, are you fielding a lot of requests or queries about prospective developments from various developers?
I'm going to say it depends. I mean, right now we have some fairly higher profile cases ranging from the co-op development, which went before the design review committee recently, to this Fairfield Inn project. And we've had some interest, and some requests come through more recently. There was a project that went through the Historic Landmarks Commission recently over off of 6th Street and that vacant lot. So, I mean, there's interest, here and there, but I'd say this spring we've had a larger share of maybe higher profile cases go before public hearings.
What concerns are you hearing from residents and visitors?
Well, I mean, typically the Community Development Department doesn't hear comments from visitors.
In your own personal lives, do you hear any?
Oh, I mean, the thing is, I think that on both sides, I hear people who have concerns about any new development restrictions that are going to be put in place. What is going to be allowed from some of the property owners who are along the waterfront? Then at the same time, of course, you hear people who have concerns about development. I think it's you hear it on both sides of the perspective, and I think that's something that's been not unique from the whole time we started this back in, Rosemary and I started this back in 2007.
Right, and I think that's one thing that everyone has to realize is that the Community Development Department is hearing both sides. A lot of times the both sides of the story don't come out as publicly. You have those who want to preserve all the views, and yet we hear from the property owners or the people who want the economic development, even if they don't own property down there. So that's where the city has to find that balance between the two and protect what the citizens want and protect the character of our community while allowing it to grow economically.
And I would say, you know, we as staff, you know, are not the decision makers.
Mm-mm.
The decision makers in this case are the boards and commissions who are appointed, and then ultimately the city council if there would be an appeal. So, staff in many cases are not the ones who decide what is appropriate and what is not and what makes code or what meets code and what doesn't. Staff will develop reports that are a starting point for these boards and commissions to move forward, but the decision makers are citizens.
How much does public testimony sway a decision, say before the Planning Commission or the Design Review Commission or Historic Landmarks Commission?
Well, I would say that these boards have to follow approval criteria. And so I would say that, you know, testimony, and there's always a statement made at the beginning of public hearings that testimony should be addressed to the applicable criteria. That is what each board and commission has to be able to use to making their decision whether or not they feel something is approved or not.
And that's what's important that the citizens don't realize sometimes is that it is code-related, criteria-related. And it can be the best project in the world, and if it doesn't meet the criteria, the commission has to deny it. And so it's the criteria, not the merit of the project. So when your basic question, you know, how much do they listen to the citizens? They do. Mm-hmm. They listen to them. And in many cases, what the citizen brings up based on that criteria will change a commissioner's mind or will bring something to light that isn't obvious at the beginning.
Right.
So they definitely listen to what is being said, but they have to apply it to the criteria.
That's definitely correct.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Brett Estes and Rosemary Johnson, for coming into the studio to speak about the Astoria Riverfront Vision Plan. Thank you, Brett and Rosemary.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Brett Estes is Astoria's city manager and former community development director. Rosemary Johnson is a retired longtime city planner who now works on a contractual basis for the city. Earlier this month, the Astoria City Council began work to complete the approximately 10-year-old Riverfront Vision Plan. The process is estimated to take about 1 year and will focus on the only uncompleted stretch of the plan, the so-called urban core between 2nd Street on the west and 16th Street on the east. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Brian Bovenizer. The show can be heard most Fridays on the stations of Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria and 89.5 Tillamook. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.